we may soon have to reclassify extinction, according to a new report by National Geographic magazine. Some species may only be bodily extinct, but not genetically. Can scientists bring back species that have been dead for centuries or even millennia? Is the technology there? And what does that mean to efforts to protect modern species from extinction? I'm joined now by Carl Zimmer. He's an award-winning science writer who writes for National Geographic and Wired and regularly contributes to the New York Times. Carl Zimmer, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
So is this possible? Could we really bring back long-gone species like the woolly mammoth?
It's definitely a possibility, and actually scientists are even further with some more recently extinct species. There's a frog, for example, that became extinct in Australia in 1980, and scientists have been able to produce embryos where there are these frog cells that are dividing and developing it. They haven't gotten to the point where they're making adult frogs yet, but they're almost there.
And this is a frog species where the young actually develops in the mother's stomach. Is that correct?
Yeah, this was such an amazing species that some scientists decided that if there was any species they wanted to bring back from extinction, this was it, the gastric brooding frog. After the male frog fertilized the eggs, the female would scoop them up in her mouth and swallow them, and they would go into her stomach, or she would stop making stomach acid and actually just rear them in her stomach. And they would actually hatch and develop into little adult frogs, and then she would actually puke them up. She would vomit them out of her mouth. Scientists couldn't believe it when they first saw it. And sadly, within a few years of its discovery, it had become extinct due to a disease that humans introduced.
So where are we at right now with the technology? I mean, really, how close are we to being able to do this?
Well, we're quite close in some cases. So if there's a species that goes extinct and scientists have already saved some of its cells and have frozen them away, that's a really promising possibility because now you have their DNA in a very well-preserved state and you can use that to do cloning experiments. But it might be possible to collect fragments of DNA from fossils and then use that information to actually engineer DNA to produce these extinct species, like maybe a woolly mammoth.
Let's talk a little bit about those types of species, or perhaps even the passenger pigeon, which hasn't been extinct as long as the woolly mammoth, for instance. What are some of the obstacles to reviving these types of species?
So the passenger pigeon was this bird that existed by the billions in the 1800s and then was hunted to death to extinction. And the last passenger pigeon died about 100 years ago. So all we have now are museum specimens, and there are no live cells in these dead birds that are in these museums, but scientists can pull out bits of their DNA and start to reconstruct what their whole genome was like. They're still just at the beginning of this project, but through a nonprofit called Revive and Restore, they're trying to move in this direction. What they would like to do then is to take the DNA of a living pigeon and put in little chunks of DNA that correspond to what they find in the passenger pigeon. Then they'd have to do some pretty fancy cloning to produce new birds that would be passenger pigeons. No one's ever cloned a bird before, believe it or not, because their eggs make it very difficult. But there are some new advances that are raising the possibility that this might be able to take place.
Now, you open your article with some scientists in Spain who had tried to clone a goat that had gone extinct in the Pyrenees Mountains, but there were problems there, and this happened about 10 years ago. Could you kind of explain how the technology has changed even since then, since that one birth that only lasted about 10 minutes before the clone died?
Yes, so this was an animal called Bucardo, which lived in the Pyrenees Mountains, and it had become extinct a couple years before because the last individual was killed by a falling tree. But they had saved some cells, and they tried to implant the cells into mothers of goats or hybrids between goats and ibexes, which are kind of wild goats. And a lot of those failed. One took hold and was able to develop to term. And when they delivered it, it turned out to have really bad birth defects and shortly died. Scientists have made a lot of advances in cloning so that now actually hundreds of animals are cloned every year, and generally they don't have health problems. They are doing much better now at this. They have figured out kind of the conditions that you need to do the cloning so that the embryos are healthy. That was a very brave, heroic attempt, but it might have just been too early, and now things are very different.
So if we can create, for instance, a polar bear in the laboratory, does that take away from the urgency to protect such a species in the wild?
No, it doesn't, because it's probably a lot easier to protect a species in the wild than to actually rebuild the species through technology. We have yet to actually, produce a single healthy individual through de-extinction. That hasn't happened yet. And a single individual is not a species. It's not something that's going to, a group of animals that's going to be able to just take care of itself for the foreseeable future. It's a huge undertaking. And so nobody who is looking into de-extinction is saying like, oh, well, this means we don't have to conserve living species. Far from it. They see it as just another tool. So for example, there are a lot of species now that are basically functionally extinct. There are just a few survivors, the northern white rhinoceros, for example. There are only four breeding individuals left, and they're not having any luck with them. So this species is as good as gone. When those animals die, does that mean it? We're done? We can't try any further? Or is there a possibility that we can actually keep working to try to bring them back and to restore their environment and so on? That's a possibility.
So cloning could really be another tool in the toolbox that conservationists can use for a species of rhinoceros, like you mentioned.
Yes, that's right. But, you have to ask, what kind of environment are you bringing it back to? There's one of the most endangered animals in the world is called the Red River Giant Soft-Shelled Turtle. It lives in China and Vietnam. It's huge. It gets to be like 200 pounds. But there are only four individuals left, and there are two in Vietnam and two in China. They're not breeding. This thing is as good as extinct. It would be great if this turtle does become extinct as we expect. It'd be great if we could bring it back through these new technologies. But where do you put it? The lakes and rivers that this turtle used to live in are horribly polluted. They're full of toxic algae and things like that. You bring these turtles back there, they're going to die. So that really, forces us to think about how we're taking care of the environment that these species are disappearing from.
Are there some other benefits to de-extinction, for instance, for researching long extinct plants for medicinal purposes, for instance?
Yeah, every time that a species goes extinct, we lose the chance to study and learn from it. Most medicines actually come from plants, and there are going to be lots of endangered species that are going to disappear before we can study them. So this is another possibility. This amazing gastric brooding frog I mentioned, some scientists really want to bring it back because they want to study it. They want to understand how this frog manages to do this astonishing feat, and they actually think that there might be some clues for fertility treatments for people because they're using a lot of the same hormones that we use. They're just using them in a very strange way. So there is a lot to learn from life, and the more species go extinct, the less chances we have to learn.
What are some of the ethical concerns with de-extinction?
Some people say, "Oh, you're playing God. You shouldn't do this." And I don't think that is a legitimate kind of objection, because you have to ask, "Well, what were we doing then when we drove these species extinct?" If you don't want us to play God, I'm afraid that it's too late. A more serious objection comes from a lot of conservation biologists who say that this is just sort of a flashy, sexy kind of technology that's not really going to solve the problems that people promise it will. And they're saying, you know, why spend all that money on something that's probably not going to work in any meaningful way? Why not take that money and then preserve, you know, thousands of acres where you could be saving a whole bunch of species at once?
If scientists are successfully able to clone a species such as the gastric brooding frog, what happens next? Could there be really a chance of being able to not only clone a species but also reintroduce it to the wild?
It's possible that people could reintroduce extinct species into the wild. What they would need is a whole population of them. They couldn't do it with just one. Even two wouldn't be enough, because you need a group of animals where there's genetic diversity so that they can withstand disease outbreaks or changes in the weather and so on. You need to build up the numbers. But, you know, scientists have learned a lot about how to do this with captive breeding programs. And they've had a few successes, like the black-footed ferret, for example, which was brought back into the wild after just a few remaining individuals had been taken into zoos and bred. So you could imagine passenger pigeons flying around in eastern forests of the United States. You can imagine woolly mammoths walking around in Siberian tundra. These are possibilities, and we need to really start to take them seriously now, because it's not just the purview of science fiction writers.
You mentioned seeing passenger pigeons flying over the eastern United States again, or the woolly mammoths in Siberia. I guess another question would be: Would reintroducing these animals, even though now it seems far fetched, but really would that almost be would that be close to introducing an invasive species at this point?
I would see it more like reintroducing animals to their former habitats, which is something we're already doing. So wolves have been reintroduced to Yellowstone, for example, and they have taken hold, and they've had a positive effect on the whole ecosystem. By hunting elk, they keep the elk population in check, and that means that they're not grazing down the plants, and so trees are bounding back. It's having a whole set of rippling effects through the ecosystem, and they're not an invasive species. They are just where they were before, and so that's sort of the focus of the de-extinction research, is like, how can we restore these ecosystems to the way they were in some cases just a few decades ago?
Carl Zimmer is the author of a new National Geographic article about de-extinction. You can find more information in National Geographic and at www.nationalgeographic.com/de-extinction. Carl Zimmer, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much.